Blog Talk Radio.
Medicine, Durham, North Carolina, on this, the fourth day of August 2016. Well, we're sitting here waiting for Earl Reese of the Sports Shop Radio Show to give us a call tonight so we can get him on the air. But in the meantime, we have Linda Van Smith, the co-host for tonight's show. She is on. And what I'd like to do right now while we're waiting for Earl, Linda, is to recap what we discussed last night with Odetta Johnson, the chief of police for North Carolina Central University. We talked about community policing and about what police departments she felt around the nation here in Durham need to get to in order to try to stem this flow of the us versus them, the me versus the feeling here between the African American community and also the police department. Linda, out of the discussion last night, what did you take away from what Chief Johnson was talking about?
I really like the idea that she said of connecting and talking with citizens in the community, because that speaks volumes, and then they would know that, you know, they care, police officers as well as everybody else cares. So I really like what she said about that. And also, she also seemed like she was very, well, I know she's very a very concerning person and wants to do all that she can for students at Central and for the citizens of Durham. So that's what I took away from that. You know, she's a very knowledgeable woman. And Sarah, and she really has a lot to bring to the table. So I thought that was very enlightening for her to say that.
Yeah, you know, I've been discussing this issue at nauseam, really. And, you know, I'm just trying to figure out a few things. I mean, it's almost like, you know, first I hear about we need to teach, or the police even say, we need to learn what to do during a traffic stop. Well, you know, it almost, when you say it like that, when the police come across like that, it almost seems like somebody, it's almost like, and maybe I'm wrong with this, but it seems like they want you to be some kind of subservient to what they want you to do. In other words, you know, I'm the big bad guy, I've stopped you now, you got, you know, your life totally belongs to me at this point. And I think that's what a lot of Americans pick up, especially African Americans, when they get in that situation. It's almost like they want you to kowtow to what they do or what they say, or you know, or else, you know, it's going to be trouble if you don't do exactly what I say. But I think what a lot of police officers seem to forget is they're just a person who has a job. They're a citizen, believe it or not. Yes, they are special people. I will not dispute that at one time. I will not dispute that one time. I will not dispute the fact that they will run into danger when others run away from danger. I will do not dispute the fact that they will jump in front of a bullet to protect you and give their own lives. I don't dispute that. But I think what most people feel is, and correct me if I'm wrong, that it is almost like you must be subservient to what I say in order to even live. I mean, you're giving me guidelines on how you're supposed to approach me, but did you learn the guidelines of how I'm supposed to approach you, but did you learn the guidelines on how I, as a police officer, am supposed to approach the citizens that I am sworn to serve? I mean, I've seen I've been in traffic stops myself where, you know, I'm going down the road. I'm not speeding. I'm not doing anything. But all of a sudden, the policeman pulls up behind me. He pulls me over. I'm sitting there with this confused look on my face like, what are you talking about? Well, anyway, he pulls me over. He comes up to the car as usual. He asks me for my driver's license or registration card, which by law he can ask me. And then he says, well, where are you going tonight? See, that's not part of the equation. Where I'm going is not part of the issue. Where I've been, where I'm going, what I'm doing, that's not part of the issue. The issue is driver's license, registration, proper insurance. That's the issue.
And then they go back to their car and they stay there for like 30, 40 minutes and then come back to you.
Right, yeah, but see, now there's even the Supreme Court says what is reasonable and just at a traffic stop should be no more than 15 minutes. No more than 15 minutes is what's reasonable and just. So now,
wait, but you,
like
did you ever notice that, though, when you get stopped and then they get your driver's license and registration and insurance, they get back to the car and it's like, okay, and then you wait and then you wait and wait and wait and wait. It just seems like it takes forever for them to come back to the car.
Oh, it does. It used to be in the good old days they could do that, but now if they go back there and do that, whatever they do after the span of 15 minutes, unless they do discover a crime, but what they do after 15 minutes, then anything that they hope to do is null and void. Okay, because you can't do that. Then they the guy comes up, he says, "Well, your taillight is out." And I'm like, "No, it's not." I just got inspected the day before. My taillight's not out. Lo and behold, I get out. Guess what? My taillight isn't out. I said, you had no probable cause to make this stop. None, except the fact you saw a young black male driving down the road, and you decided you just didn't have nothing to do today.
Well, he has to make his quota. Remember that, too.
Yeah, and see, so he and I got to, he was like, and then he got to the point where, well, you know, like I wouldn't answer any of his questions because I don't have to. And then, it got to, because now it's a power struggle now, because now he's really ticked me off, okay? So, then he says, well, I can take you to jail. I said, yeah, you can. But guess what? When we get to jail, you still won't find out where I'm going because I have the right to remain silent. And then when we get to court, I'm going to take the fifth against self-incrimination because I don't have to tell anybody where I'm going or what I'm doing. And so, therefore, you still won't know. And I'll own everything you got, and I'll even leave you a half a draw leg. That's all I'm going to leave you. Because I'm going to sue you for everything you got. Because you had no probable cause to make this stop. And he shoved my driver's license and registration back at me and then swirled on his heels and left. And I said, when he went by, I said, this is not over. And now and this was back in 1982, and he didn't
here
have a job
Durham?
After that. In Durham?
In Durham,
yeah. And, yeah, 1982, and he did not have a job after that. I'm lucky enough to be in a position that, or blessed enough to be in a position where my father was a police officer, and he told me who to talk to and what to do about the situation.
Right.
So, I have a unique understanding of police, So I guess this is Earl calling you right now. Let me check and see and if we can get things going here. And we'll check and see if that's Earl. It hung up, so I guess that wasn't Earl. We'll try. Hopefully he'll call back in just a second, or that phone number will call back in just a second. But that's what I had to deal with, and a lot of kids had to deal with that. I was at North Carolina Central at the time, and a lot of college kids had to deal with that. And, see, I feel like it's wrong in America for me to have to get up in the morning and have to maybe deal with that. Now, if everybody in America got up in the morning and had to deal with that, then we all have to deal with it. But because I'm a black male in America, why do I have to feel any different getting up about myself? Why do I have to have any fear in my heart? Why do I have to say the safest place for me is inside and not outside? Why am I not free to go to the park? Why am I not free to go to the store? Why am I not free to just drive down a road I pay taxes on?
Mm-hmm. The thing is, too, why did it all of a sudden it seemed like this has blown up? The incident happened for you in 1982, but now – today, it seems like it is like really getting out of control, and you wonder where did this come from. First of all, it was subtle. Now it's like really, people are really being vocal, and things are really happening that weren't happening before.
Well, that's what I think. I'm gonna tell you exactly where everything came from. Everything stemmed from the fact that you have cell phones everywhere with cameras now. See, before it was your word against the officer's word. Now people film this thing, and they're beginning to see maybe these people aren't lying about this. Maybe what they were saying was true. Social media. I can sit here and an incident can happen with me and a police officer, and I can upload that sucker to Facebook or YouTube in a second and get a million looks. So there's a million pair of eyes looking at this thing. There's a million pair of eyes seeing it now. It is the internet. It is social media. It is the fact that people record stuff and upload it to the clouds now before the cops can get to it, anybody else can get to it and destroy it. It's already out there. I don't care how many times they take it down off of Facebook or YouTube. It's already out there. People have already downloaded it. They're watching it. And they can see when the policeman does something, and then the first thing that they tell you in the news conference is, oh, my goodness, You're not looking at what you're looking at. You're not seeing what you're seeing.
Right.
That's what really ticks, and like I said last night, I think that's what really ticks off a lot of African Americans and Americans. We have these feelings. These feelings are real, and then you actually tape it. You actually show the world what's going on, and the first thing they say is, "Oh, you're not seeing what you're seeing. That's not what happened. That's not what happened."
It's an excuse.
Yeah, if it was a tape of me choking out a police officer on a Staten Island street in New York, there would not be an investigation. There would not be a long inquiry. I would be cuffed.
You'd be
stuffed.
Right.
And
possibly
and
dead.
Tremendously,
dead
or make a high bond. But a cop can do it, and then all of a sudden now we have to have a 10-month investigation into this while he's getting paid vacation. And that's just not the way, and that's just not fair. You can't break the law to enforce the law. And for them to sit there and you look at them choking out Eric Garner, okay, let's just say that he did use a chokehold on Eric Garner for breaking the law, okay? Let's say he did that. Well, what was Eric Garner doing? Well, they said he was selling cigarettes, what they call Lucy's in New York. They sell them, like, one at a time, whatever. I think it's a big thing up there, you know. They sell them one at a time. Okay. Well, where were the cigarettes? Well, he didn't have any on him. Then what was he doing? Well, he was selling cigarettes. How was he selling cigarettes? Well, he was selling one at a time, but he didn't have any cigarettes on him. Yeah, but he was selling cigarettes. When was he selling them? Well, we saw him yesterday. Today's today. Why did you arrest him yesterday? Well, you saw him today. You say he was selling the cigarettes. Well, he didn't have it. Then why did you choke him? Well, because he was supposed to have had cigarettes. Supposed to have had them. And he resisted arrest. Why are you arresting him? Well, I'm arresting him because he was selling cigarettes. But he didn't have any cigarettes, so how can you arrest him? And then, first of all, how can you say he's resisting arrest? Well, you never told him he was under arrest. Not one time did anybody in that total interaction with Eric Garner say, "You're under arrest."
And I think, too, they got off, didn't they, the cops? The cop that
had
the chokehold
on.
Grand
jury, yeah, the grand jury refused to indict. You know, so, I mean, a prosecutor can get a grand jury to do anything he wants. You can get a grand jury to indict an ironing board if you want to. A grand jury is just a... That's just something that the prosecutor can use.
And one thing, I think young people see this, and I think that's why they get so aggressive.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's another reason why, too, we have more crime and more people, more youth doing things because of that. They see things on TV. They see that things aren't right. And therefore, they say, hey, okay, you know, well, if it can happen there, you know, why can't I carry a gun? Why can't I, you know, shoot up? You know, because there was a shooting in a Husky yesterday.
Yeah, I saw
don't know
that.
You heard
was,
about
you know,
that.
Yeah, civilization.
And, like, what the world is going on? You know, it's
it's like anywhere else. I mean, you see policemen. All right, let's just say the kid in the traffic stop, I call them kids because everybody's young to me, but the gentleman in the traffic stop in Minnesota, he stopped his car. He put his car in park. He turned the car off. He took his keys out of the ignition, put them on the dashboard. He turned his hazards on. He put his hands on the steering wheel. When the officer came up to the car, he informed the officer, "I have a carry permit. I have a gun on my right side and a holster." And the cop shoots him anyway. So he did everything correctly. That you're told to do. You know how the policemen always say, "This is how you interact with us."
Yes.
Okay. So he did everything they told him to do to interact with them, and he still got killed. So now what do I tell a kid now? Go out here and do this, and you'll be fine. That's not true.
Right.
Because this guy here just got killed for doing everything he was supposed to do. So now how am I supposed to explain to a young male that, you know, I'm going to be just as dead if I got a gun fighting back, or I'm going to be just as dead sitting there like, just taking it from the guy.
Yeah, and
so
that's
how
they think. Yeah, that's the mentality of our youth today. You know, what difference is it going to make? You know, they're going to do what they want to do anyway. Authority figures are going to do what they want to do anyway and get away. So I'm going to do what I need to do.
Yeah, I'm going to tell you the biggest hypocritical thing I've ever seen that you lose a lot of young people. Everybody keeps saying, get young people involved in the church. Well, the church is, and I know this is going to ruffle a lot of feathers, but it's the worst place to be. And people are looking and say, what in the world are you talking? What do you mean? Okay, let me tell you this. You have young ladies. You have a young ladies group. I've seen this in action. Women come in, young ladies and older women, mothers of the church, they come in and talk to these young ladies about how to be young ladies, you know, how to abstinence from sex, and all this good stuff. Well, my question to them is this. How is Sister Sadie, who's 80, going to come in there and talk to all these girls about abstinence, and she got 12 youngins and 12 different daddies? How in the world, and the only reason that Sister Sadie is saying that y'all don't need to do all that stuff because she's too old for anybody to want her now.
Ooh. And I see what you're saying.
Young enough to, yeah, while she was out there young enough to kick up her heels, she kicked them up 12 times, is all I know.
You're saying teach by example.
Teach by example. Yeah.
So.
I'm a young person, and I'm sitting there, and you got a guy like Eddie Long. Eddie Long was looked at as one of the great pastors of our time. As a matter of fact, went to North Carolina Central University, and he did all that. And then he's up there talking about, and I could tell you something was wrong because every message that he gave that I happened to be flipping through the channels going to football games and heard for about 2 or 3 minutes that he had to say, because I don't listen to TV evangelists because I wouldn't go into that right now. But he was talking about, you know, homosexuals, and then he turned out to being involved in homosexual activity.
But don't you find that the people that talk about it the most are the ones that really are? Do you ever notice that? The ones that, I hate homosexuals, and they're the ones that are. I find it amusing.
Yeah, so we lose young people. You have people like Jesse Jackson, who went to that 2-year school in Greensboro. He's sitting there, and he said, and he was up there talking about, you know, if you don't have a baby, can't pay for the baby, you know, don't do this. And then found out he has a baby.
Exactly.
Yeah, he has a baby. See, now how are you going to explain to these young people that you are true blue and what you say matters when you're doing the very same thing that you're telling them not to do? Now, I use that church scenario a lot because I will say it in a heartbeat. When I'm sitting in the middle of the congregation, I'm standing up there at the pulpit giving an MC and something, I'll say it in a heartbeat. How are you going to sit there and tell these young people all this? And I'll point right down and I'll say, you got 3 youngins and can't tell them who the daddies are. But yeah, you're going to tell these young girls what not to do.
How to behave, exactly.
How to behave. And I said, it's only the truth. I said, we're in church, right? The truth still sets you down there hollering and falling around on the floor talking about, Lord, the truth sets you free. Well, sister, I don't see you hollering now.
But you know, they can explain it. They'll say maybe it was a different time, you know, back in the day. That's how they can explain that.
They can explain it because, that's in a different time back. The only difference between back in the day is now is we got Holiday Inn because we could go, and they had a 52 Chevy in the backyard. That's the only difference.
You're thinking about Murfreesboro, aren't you? I'm sorry.
I'm thinking about the world. All these folks sitting there talking about. Now, if there wasn't as much going on back then as it is going on now, can you tell me this one question? Why there's so many daggone people in the world?
Yeah.
If it wasn't as much fornicating going on back then, why there's so many people in the world?
It was totally sudden. Then there wasn't birth control, remember?
They had birth control
back in the day. Well, abstinence. My mom said there was no birth control. That was back in the day.
Oh, there wasn't no abstinence. Oh, ain't no such thing as abstinence.
And so, you know, that's why there were so many babies being born.
There was birth control, but just not for us. We were back in slavery times. We were raised to work in the field.
Oh, slavery. Okay,
you start back then and come forward, and you see that African Americans actually have less children than anybody else.
Yes.
We actually do. We have less children than anybody else. We'll have that 1.5 kid. That's it. Then you have other groups in West Virginia with no shoes and no electricity, living in the backwoods in the Appalachian Mountains. They have no teeth. Now they have 14 or 15, and all of them can be covered by Obamacare, by the way. And now they have 14 or 15 kids. Okay? Now, you know, but you look at them as, that's just normal. But when you look at everybody else, you know, then it's wrong. But you see African Americans not having children at the same clip that every other race is on the planet, and that's why we're kind of slipping down the pole now. I mean, we used to be second, now we're getting to be third, and we're going to get to be fourth,
Asians, I don't think Chinese, they don't have as many children. They don't have that many children.
Right, and besides, now I think the word is getting out, because abstinence and cutting back and waiting and stuff is working. The message is resonating within the African-American community. I mean, people are waiting longer. If they're not waiting longer, they're at least taking precautions.
Yes, they are. Exactly.
So, you know, that's okay, but – I think, you know, getting back to the whole social issue, I mean, last night just talking about, yeah, we do want policemen to be doctors and lawyers and therapists, and they're not equipped for that. Policemen are equipped to enforce the law, but also there is some discretion in enforcing that law. Like she said last night, she kept stressing felonies and serious misdemeanors, they try not to make arrests unless they have to. Sometimes you got no choice. You got no choice.
Right. Exactly.
But let's see if this is Earl for the last few minutes here. Hold on 1 second. Let me see.
Sure.
Is this Earl? Yes, it is.
Earl.
Hey, man, my apologies.
Hey.
I was stuck in traffic. Hey, how are you?
All right, no problem at all, man. We got about 8 minutes, which is good. That's okay. I can understand being stuck in traffic. Oh, my God, I can understand that. Well, what's going on, my friend?
Not much, man. How's it going?
It is going great. Hey, look, the listening audience is out there. Tell them about, you know, you have a great show going on now. The Sports Shop Radio Show is on the air, one of the hottest shows, not only in the Triangle, but around the country. You get some of the top-notch talent to come on your show. Man, you're doing a great job. But tell our listening audience quickly about your background and what brought you to the Sports Shop Radio Show.
Well, you know, I played football in college at Alabama A&M. I came to Raleigh-Durham by way of IBM. And then one day I got a call because I was involved with the program. The NC program was with the summer league during the summer that involved college players and pro players. And one of the ladies who was involved in the project and advertising perspective, Linda Greenwood, asked me to come on to pitch hit for a guy by the name of Mike Woods. Unfortunately, you had an issue health-wise and had to be on the injured reserve list for a while, and I came on, man, really having really not any experience at all, and I just kind of mimic what I heard on the radio, like listening to you all the time and other people who do sports talk radio, and I just did what you guys do, and it turned out to be kind of successful, and we try to create an environment that reminds people of the barbershop, cigar shop, the beauty shop, or even the mechanic shop, and I brought Kevin McClendon and K-Mac, as his name is, and Bill Murphy along with me, and we created the Sports Shop.
Yeah, I tell you, man, Linda Van Smith is also, she's a co-host tonight. She's on with us. Linda, I tell you one
thing.
I can tell you this, Linda. I have more fun than you can shake a stick at. I mean, I look forward to that show. It came on, Mondays at 1 o'clock on WRJ.
Yep,
it's gone dark now, but it was at 1 o'clock, 1 to 2 o'clock. Let me tell you something. When I got, you know, K-Mac and Bill Murphy and Reese in there and all of us were sitting there together, man, that was the most fun I ever had. I think that's when everything started to skyrocket. I mean, we talked about every subject from point A to point B and everything in between in sports.
Right.
And it's the most fun. And not only that, Linda, here's the thing that really sets the Sports Shop Radio Show apart and everything, and people got to understand this is out there listening. Those, you know, K-Mac and Earl are not only great in radio, they're good people. And they really care about young people. Oh, man, I'm telling you what I know. You know, I don't pull no punches. When I say it, it's the gospel, in my opinion. You guys, you care so much about the youth, the young people. You care about bringing young people in. You care about working with them. You want to get out there in the community and let them know. Because believe it or not, Linda, if you look at sports radio overall across the country, there are not but a very few African-Americans that are in sports radio.
Exactly.
It's a limited club. It really is. Unless you're like a big-time name, a Ray Lewis or somebody, it's really a small club. Go ahead, Earl.
And Michael, one of the things that was a good segue into other things I want to mention. So we went from there to Capital Broadcasting and gave us the opportunity. We was on weekends for about 3.5 years, Saturday mornings. Then we moved about 6 months ago to mid-mornings from 10 to 12. Then shortly after that, about a month ago, we went morning drive. So I said it to say, and I'm just saying this because it's definitely true. We, K-Mac and I, it's called the Sports Shop with Reese and K-Mac. We're the only African Americans that host a morning drive show on a sports talk show. And we're proud anywhere in the country, and we're proud of that. And Michael, you've been a lot of support to us, obviously. Like I said, I kind of mimic myself after you because I didn't know what to do. I just watched what you did and listened to what you did, and it turned out to be successful. And congratulations. You've been grinding. I like how you include all of the –
Oh, I think we lost him. Is he there?
I don't think so.
Uh-oh.
But you were grinding. You were hustling and grinding. That is fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. I think he's back now.
Okay.
You there, Earl?
Earl, hello. Come back. We want to hear about Mike.
Oh, you don't want to hear too much about me. I think he's probably
stuck in the dead zone there.
He's probably driving down the road, so he's probably in a dead spot. But I will tell you this. I mean, there we go.
Yeah, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, you go ahead. Finish what you were saying. I know you got cut off. You're in a dead spot, probably.
Finish talking about how great Mike is.
Oh yeah. Don't let me stop doing that. Mike is the mecca. No, I really appreciate how you have created a real nice niche. Often the female coaches of America, particularly college landscape, and in particular the HBCU crowd, they don't get a lot of love, and I really appreciate what you do and the niche that you have regarding that. And trust me, it's been noticed by a lot of people. You guys should keep grinding that way, because I think from my vantage point, that's a formula that's going to work for you guys.
Yeah, I tell you, I got into that. I broadcast volleyball and softball and basketball, women's basketball for North Carolina Central. Also, I do a little men's basketball when they throw it in there. I can't wait to get my claws on football one of these days. But, I noticed that, it just wasn't – when I looked at North Carolina Central, I looked at the fact that men's basketball was on, football, of course, was on, and a little bit of baseball was on. And I said to myself, why in the world don't we have the ladies' softball games on the air, ladies' volleyball, and women's basketball for the most part? Well, I went and talked to Chris Hooks, who was there at the time, who has since moved on.
Yep.
But Kyle Serba was there. And I said, Kyle, I will come in and I will do softball. And he's like, you want to do softball? I said, yes. I think the ladies deserve an opportunity to get their talents out there on the air like the men do. Oh, I said, oh, yeah, by the way, I'll do volleyball. Now, in the back of my mind, I'm saying, I've never done a volleyball game in my life. Oh, my God, what am I doing? But I decided I'm going on and I do volleyball. And so it became a nice little niche there that people really, really tune in. And there's really a good following for both, for all those sports that I broadcast on the ladies' side. And then I got to looking around the country, and I said, nobody really talks about women's basketball,
right.
Especially HBCU basketball.
Exactly.
Talks to HBCU football coaches that much out of the SAC, out of the SAC conference or even the CIAA, and it's right here in our area. So I said, let's try to work with that. So that's what we're trying to do is bring, those type programs out. I mean, like right now I have the coaches from Mississippi Valley State on there. I've got Grambling coming up. I've got Tuskegee coming up. I go all around the country and try to get them because these kids work just as hard as everybody else. And
Mike, the reason I love that, obviously, I'm from an HBCU undergrad, so I love that you show the HBCU some love. But if I would, since I have a poll in here, I want to hear from the lady voice. I haven't met her before. How did you get involved with this guy, Mike? How did he swing to you to come on this show to be his co-host?
Okay.
Answer that question.
First of all, Mike is my homeboy. We're both from Hereford County. And,
okay.
Well, and so Mike has come to my school. I'm a teacher at Smith Middle School in Chapel Hill.
Okay.
And I have career day
Friday.
Thank
you for that. My mom's a teacher,
In Chapel Hill?
No, she retired. She's in Birmingham, Alabama. She was a teacher for 45 years, so I love teachers right here.
45 years?
Oh, yeah. God almighty.
But back then, that's the going. So anyway, so Mike came and he talked about his radio show and how students could do it themselves. And so then we connected from there, and Mike called me, I believe, correct me if I'm wrong, Mike, and you wanted me, so you said, hey, I've got an idea. How would you like to, be a co-host on your show? And I was like, sure. And I jumped right into it, and I was just as scared as I don't know what, but I am really, really liking and enjoying it, and I'm glad Mike has given me the opportunity to do this because I'm loving it.
Well, you're working with a professional there. Like I got to say,
I know.
My work out there. Yeah, he is the best. Sometimes we get a little out of control. Like I said, the sports show format is kind of open, free flowing, and we want to keep it that way. We want to mimic what you hear in the barbershop. When people ask me, well, what kind of show is it? Well, I say, it reminds you of the barbershop. Every time I say that, people start laughing because they understand what I mean when I say that, though. Yeah.
I tell you what, if we could go back and get some of the old tapes, and I have them around here somewhere, some tapes of the old shows at WRJD. Man, let me tell you something. We had to remember, one thing we had to remember, we had to, during the commercial breaks, we had to say, fellas, we're the Christian radio station now.
Yes, that's exactly right.
Yeah, it would be
Christian radio? Really?
I was, yeah, believe it or not, Linda, yes, I was at a Christian radio station.
My.
Michael Ellie. Yeah, that, now that does say a lot with me and a Christian radio. But I said, do you know how many pages of the Bible fell off at the Vatican when I went to a Christian radio station?
Wow.
They're like, what? Ain't no way. I can see Jesus up there now talking about he did what?
So let me ask Earl a question. Earl, let me ask you a question. So how was it when you started? I know you had, you were working with Mike. So how was it for you when you started out? And the lady told do you mind doing this?
Well, I mean, I was shocked, but one of the things that I've been lucky enough, I met a lot of people. I've been around for a while, so I met a lot of people in the sports world. So I was able to call on some of my good friends to come on the show, and that kind of got it going. I also kind of left them up for conversation. We achieved good guests. You just got to come in from time to time, and you'll be fine. So that's what I did, and it turned into guys liking the show. Always want to come back on. So I just watched Mike, and I just kind of mimic what he did, and then listen to other talk radio shows, and we created our own little niche, and that's how we created Sports Shop.
And I tell you, Linda, you got to listen to the show. They have done a tremendous job. It's one of the hottest shows. And then a lot of people sit there and say, well, Mike, aren't you on your show? Aren't you promoting another show? And people might go and listen to that show. Well, see, they don't understand. It's not a competition between me and Earl. It's
no,
not a competition
no, not
at
not.
All. Well, we're friends. They're great people. If you want to go listen to their show, I invite you to do it. I'm telling you, because they're good people. They do a good show. They put out a quality product, and I encourage everyone to listen. We're on at different times anyway. He's on in the morning. I'm on in the evening. So you want to listen to both the shows, it's fine. But, you know, like I said, there's so few of us in this business. We don't need to tear
that's
it down.
Exactly right.
We need to build it up, man. And that's the way I feel about it.
You could have said it better. My thing is that I think we come at each other from the standpoint of you're grinding, you're trying to do your thing, you're bringing a perspective to your listening audience that other people don't do, and we're doing the exact same thing maybe in a different kind of way. Collectively, we're just trying to serve the listeners, bring a different flavor. We're all African-Americans trying to make it in this business, and we have to kind of reach out and help each other out as opposed to push each other away, and I really compliment you. And really promoting our show, we're going to do the same for your show. We already do. With the tweets, every time I say something about what you guys do on Twitter, whatever, I retweet it, and you do the same thing for us, and we really do appreciate that.
Hey, anytime, man, you know how I feel about you guys. You know I think that y'all are absolutely – I've told you off air, so I'll tell you on air, that you and K-Mac are the best salt of the earth. I just can't say it enough. I mean, people just don't understand how it is when you get – good brothers who will come in and do what they say they're going to do. And they come in and work with the young people and help the young people. Just not sit there and talk at them, talk with them. I don't think people understand how that matters in the community. It really does.
It does matter.
You guys do that.
Community is a big part of what we do. You know, we highlight they like any group or, I don't know, I guess organizations that are doing good things in the community. Well, we're going to highlight and they like those things anytime you want on our show, and of course you do the same. So, like I said, it's a collective effort. It's like to take a village to raise a neighborhood, take a village to support people like us, and we got to support each other. And I'm just excited. And now that you have Linda on with you, maybe things are really take off now.
Earl, I'm telling you. You would not believe how the show has picked up once I got. It was just it came to me one night. I said, I know Linda. Linda's, very good at what she does. She expressed an interest in wanting to be in radio. Like I said, we're from Hereford County. She was one of the few people there that wear shoes. And I bought her in on the show. And, it was like, it's almost like it took off. That niche got even more because, it's nice for a male to talk about athletics as far as females, but it's also better for a female to talk about female athletics also. So
yes.
She comes in, she brings her perspective, and one thing she drills the coaches on, if you listen to our show, with her being a teacher, your mom was a teacher for 45 years, my mom was a teacher for 33
yes.
and a half years, the first thing they're going to
yes.
drill them on is, well, how's the academic work looking over there?
I know.
You know, I know they can shoot a jump shot. I ain't worried about that. Well, what are they doing in the classroom? So,
well, it's funny. I get that. One of the things I just want to mention, then I'm not sure how much time I have left, but one of the things you mentioned is very, very important. One of the concepts that the reason I think your show and my show is successful, because often there are majority of sports, particularly football, basketball, across the landscape, majority of sports are played by African Americans or people of color. And often, now often you have people of color talking about those people vis-a-vis in the media or on the radio. So that's why I think you and I, Linda, and the rest of my crew, we have a unique opportunity to be special in that right, because if a majority of the people playing the sports, it'd be nice to have African-Americans or people of color talking about those people as well. And I think that's a great opportunity that we both have in our special meetings and our verticals that we both share.
Yeah, and you know what really, and then we'll be wrapping up, but you know what really, really makes me feel good about being in radio is, like I said, I do a lot of broadcasting at Central. And
yeah.
the kids that are there, and I call them all kids because, my God, they're kids to me. I'm an old dude. So all the kids that are there, they come up to me. Do you know how many have come up to me and said, I want to do what you do? I've heard you on the radio when I'm back in my dorm, when I can't come to the game, and I want to do what you do. How do I learn how to do that? That is the one
right.
of the biggest compliments you could give to me, because now I'm going to sit down with that kid, and I'm going to work with that kid on how to get this done. Because, as
right.
you know, we're getting long in tooth, brother. We need somebody to step in behind
us.
Yeah, we're not going to give up our niche. We're not going to give up our spot. We will turn it over to somebody to keep it going, but we need to start working with those young people now and to have them. And I've had, I know at least, Earl, 40 or 50 kids come up and say,
wow.
I want to learn how to do what you do. And that just
wow.
really makes me feel so warm inside that they would entrust me, you know, to
yes.
you and people like us that will
yes.
to help them on their way and start their career. I tell them all the time, start small, do your own thing, and then build your way up. And the biggest thing that stops you from doing what you do in this business, and Earl, you know, Linda, you know, you've been through it, the biggest thing that stops you is fear.
Yes.
Never
That's
be
exactly
afraid
right.
yes.
to think outside
yes.
that box. I started this business
yes.
at 14 and a half years old. You talking about scared?
Wow.
Almost wet myself when I turned on the microphone for the first time in my life. I
wow.
couldn't say a word. I couldn't say anything. So I clicked the mic off. I started the music playing because we were DJs back then. A general manager was sitting in the room with me. He cleared his throat. I turned around and looked at him. He said, you got that out of your system? Good.
Right.
Never let it happen again. So it never happened to me again. I was always sure what I was doing. And that's what you have to be. You have to have a love for what you're doing. You have to have information about what you're doing. And basically, it's just love what you're doing, and everything will flow. And the
yeah.
first time I came on the air with you guys, you remember the first time we went to commercial break, and I looked around at you three guys, the first time I had worked with you,
right.
the first day I said,
right.
I said, fellas, this feels like home. I said, you
yes.
guys are good. Remember that? I said, you guys
yes.
are great. And it just took off from there. And
yeah,
that
man,
particular
it's
time
been
spot,
special, man.
Yeah, wasn't that a good time, man? That was like, I can't believe
oh,
how the show blew up like that, and then it was just unbelievable. Well, Earl, thank you so much for coming on the show. We got to kind of wrap things up now, but thank you so much for coming on the show. We got to get you back on the air. We can get you on for a full 30 or a full hour. And
I would love to, man. Again, I apologize chiming in a little late. Traffic. I was trying to get to a place where I can call, and it's just been crazy up here, yeah.
I understand totally. My whole day has been crazy, too, and it's about to get crazier after we get off the air. But it's just one of those things where thank you so much for coming on. You know, I listen to you guys. You know, like I say, I keep up with you. I'm dead on you, man. If y'all tweet something out or Facebook something out, I'm right there with you because I want to get the information
I know.
Out there.
And we appreciate you, too, and it was great meeting Linda for the first time. I'm pretty sure we won't be strangers next time we have a conversation like this together.
No.
Absolutely.
Yes,
okay.
yes.
Yeah, if you're
okay.
ever up at North Carolina Central, just come on up and see me. Either I'm going to be probably not – I probably won't be up in the crow's nest, but I'll be down on the floor So just come on down and just stop by. Come on the air. Get you on the air. We'll talk a little bit. We'll promote the Sports Shop Radio Show on there, and we'll do what we can do for you.
And you know, I shared with you already. I got to get you on the Sports Shop, too, so you can promote your show. And again, this is the labor of love in every sense of the word. And I really do appreciate it, guys. And I don't take it lightly when you invite me on. You guys keep doing what you're doing and keep grinding. And, you know, that's what it's all about. And much success to your show. And looking forward to talking to you down the line.
Okay, buddy. Same to you. Okay. Take care now.
Take care, bye.
All right.
Thank you, Earl.
That was Earl Reese of the Sports Shop Radio Show. And, you know, it was a great time having him on. You can listen to it. It's on The Buzz Radio. You can also, you know, just go into Sports Shop Radio, and you'll be able to find out all the information you need about their show. And I tell you, Earl is good people, K-Mac, great people, and I'm just not saying that lightly. I cannot say it enough because you know how it is in this business sometimes. You meet people that are just people, but these are genuinely good people. And, you know, much love to them and continue what they're doing. And, you know, it's nice to see two brothers doing what they do. Also, Bill Murphy out there, he's a voice, the PA announcer for North Carolina State University. He's also involved in that, too. So, you know, those three guys came together and created something great. Well, Linda, I think we can wrap up the show today. We'll be on tomorrow with DeShonda Grossi, I think
Gore.
I pronounced her name. Gore. Did I say Grossi? Gore. Mm-hmm. She'll be on tomorrow.
Shaw University.
I want to say Grossi from Shaw University. Grossi. And what am I thinking about? And she'll be on tomorrow to talk about her dual roles as both the softball coach and the volleyball coach. Now, I'm telling you something. Those two sports are exhausting. I don't know how she does it, but she does it in a dual capacity. A lot of coaches in the CIAA do it that way, and I'm going to find out tomorrow why in the world do you do that? But anyway, because that is murder. Two college sports, oh, my God. You don't even rent your house. You just kind of walk through and take a shower. You're never at home. I mean, really.
Wow, that's interesting.
Yeah, you know, it's kind of wild. But we're going to talk to her tomorrow.
Find out tomorrow.
We'll find out tomorrow night. Well, until then, you take care, and everybody else, goodbye, everybody.
See ya.